What does the Bible say about tithing? This is another podcast in the category Money as part of the Current Events and Issues series. Let's begin with a definition. What is a tithe? Often you'll hear Christians saying, "I gave my tithe this week," or occasionally, "I paid my tithe," as though it were some kind of bill that had come due. But did you know that tithe is not, technically speaking, the word for contribution? A tithe is a tenth. You can hear the similarity, tithe, tenth. It means 10%. But it's not so obvious to English speakers that tithe comes from tenth, any more than that the word dime comes from the word decimal, although it does. Most Christians, in truth, give nowhere near 10%. Let me illustrate from the state of the U.S. where I live. Here, household income is about $50,000. That is, the total income brought in by those who live in a typical household and work. And more and more families, that's a husband and a wife, or it may even be a single mother or a single father, and maybe one of the older children is working. At any rate, household income is about $50,000, just a little bit under the national average, though very close. True tithers would therefore be giving nearly $250 a week in contributions. With per capita income in Georgia, a little bit over $20,000, a membership of a church of 500 would be giving a weekly contribution of $20,000. But of course, some make less than the national average or the state average. Many, on the other hand, make a lot more. It's not uncommon for 10 to 20% of the membership to be giving 80% of the weekly contribution. And I know that there are a number of families who have a very high income who give almost nothing at all, which calls into question whether we really believe all the talk about tithing. Many studies have been done. You can investigate them online. You can read books by reputable groups such as the Auburn Institute based in Maryland. Most churchgoers give around 2% of their income. And ironically, it's the poorer congregations who tend to give more. The richer ones, and I won't name the denominations, though it's a matter of public information, the richer ones tend to give 1%, 2%. It's the poorer ones who tend to give more, maybe 4%, 5%. Some of the poorest and the most socioeconomically depressed parts of the country may actually be giving 7% of their gross income. Well, what is the origin of this concept? In the Old Testament, the people of God were an agricultural society. They lived very close to farming and livestock. And so 10% would mean 10% of the new births among the flocks and the herds. It would be 10% of the crops, of the wheat, of the grain, of the things that are grown. And if you want to get into the background, at the end of this podcast, look at the notes, and I'll give you links for further study. All I'm saying is it was an agricultural phenomenon. Tithing was not tied to salaries that were given by employers, though employers did give salary, because people paid much more with barter and much more at an agricultural level. The question, of course, is this still applicable in the New Covenant? We know the Old Testament passages, places like Malachi 3, which is very commonly quoted, if we'll bring in the full tithe, then God will open the floodgates of heaven and pour out a blessing on us. But there are many passages in the law which command tithing. In fact, there was more than one, so the average Jew would have been giving well over 10%. The question is it still applicable in the New Covenant times? It's problematic when we move from an agrarian church state to the New Covenant people of God who are not a church state. That is, in the Old Testament, the money was given to the priestly class, to the Levites, and everything stayed within the state. In the New Covenant, there's no church state to support. We just have local congregations. We don't In the old times, they didn't normally pay taxes to governments outside their own church state, unless they'd been invaded or unless they were occupied by the Romans, which was the case in the first century. The money stayed within the covenant people of God within Israel. Today, there's a church-state separation. And all I mean by that is that the state does not dictate what the church believes or practices or vice versa. Now, there's another problematic issue. And that is, when someone says, yes, I believe in giving 10%, I must reply, do you mean 10% of your gross income or your net income? And there is a big difference. Of course, your gross income is everything that comes in. The net income is what you have after the government takes its share. It's more your take-home. We learned this when we moved to certain socialist countries in Europe where we lived, where the tax rate was extremely high. We were paying 60% tax or higher, and only for a modest income. Well, if you're only taking 40% of your gross, paying 10% of the net, think about that, would really just be paying 10%, paying 10% on the net. I'm getting myself tangled up here. You know the numbers can be tricky. The net is what you bring home. So if you're paying 10% of that, you're really only paying about 4% overall. But if you did 10% of the gross, then you'd be giving back 25% of your net. So think about that. It's very hard to apply this 10% principle consistently because of the tax structure of different countries. And so if we're going to say this is a law from God, however, there are exceptions in 200 of the 215 countries in the world, or whatever the number is, then maybe it isn't really a law from God. Is the 10% figure really a maximum or a minimum? Now, this is an important question, too. I believe under the old covenant, 10% was the minimum. But I don't think it was often any more than a maximum either. That is, would someone really have brought double the amount of agricultural produce that was due to the Levites, which was collected every few years? Or if it was time for Passover, would a family gratuitously kill two Passover lambs when one would do? I don't believe so. In the new covenant, there is no minimum, nor is there a maximum. Well, we'll come to that in just a moment. Well, there are lots of verses in the Old Testament to justify giving 10%. But are Christians bound to follow the Old Testament laws? Well, if I understand biblical interpretation, no. Very few of them, in fact. Very few are repeated in the New Covenant. Now, all of them tell us something about God, but it's very problematic to take an Old Testament law and say, see, we must obey this today. When a child is born, you must go to Jerusalem and offer some kind of a sacrifice. I don't think any Christian believes that that has to be done, and yet it's clearly in the Old Testament. The truth is, there's not a single verse in the New Testament that commands tithing. Now, someone will invariably bring up Matthew 23:23. This is the chapter where Jesus is criticizing the Pharisees because they were meticulous tithers. Let me read. I'll read, why not, from the New American Standard. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. Jesus, in a way, commends them for giving 10% even on their garden herbs, even on the most minute portions of their agricultural produce. And yet, he criticizes them for neglecting the weightier things of the law, like mercy. And then he says, these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others, and thus he seems to be saying, yes, you should have been giving 10% on everything. But here's the question. Who is he speaking to? Context is king. Jesus is not speaking to Christians. He's speaking to Jews. And he's certainly not undermining the Old Testament law because it's still in effect until the cross. So Matthew 23:23 is a point about the heart, not about the level of giving. And even so, it refers to giving under the law of Moses, which today is no longer applicable. Other Christians will point to Matthew 5:20. And that's where Jesus says, unless our righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees, we're not going to make it into the kingdom of heaven. Now, if that's the case, I definitely want my righteousness to exceed that of the Pharisees. But what is he saying? Is he saying that the Pharisees gave 10%, and so we should give at least 11%? Possibly. But look at the context again. He's talking about the nature of our spirituality. Is it merely exterior, or is it interior? Is it for show, or is it simply between us and God? The Pharisees were not righteous because they failed to give 10%. Their lack of righteousness came because of their motive. Now, this is fairly easy to demonstrate. We also know the Pharisees at this time fasted twice a week. You can read about that in the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector in Luke 18. If we're going to say, well, our fasting must exceed that of the Pharisees, and interpret it quantitatively, numerically, then we would have to fast more than two times a week. So does that mean if we don't fast three times a week that we're not going to enter the kingdom? I don't think so. And I think this points up the error, the common interpretive error, of reading Matthew 5:20 as a proof that Christians have to give more than 10%. Jesus is focusing on the heart. And you may wonder, where did I come by these insights? Did I ever teach fasting myself? Did I ever teach tithing myself? Yes, I'd like to tell you about that. This may be helpful. When I became a Christian, no one talked about tithing, although we certainly talked about giving, and everyone was expected to give. It was some 13 years later, the year was 1990, when I remember being part of many discussions about tithing. And for pragmatic reasons, and maybe for reasons of elegance, because calculating a tithe is simple. You just move the decimal point over one space. Many brothers agreed, well, yes, we should be giving 10%. But when I say pragmatic reasons, I mean that there was an increasing need for money at a time where more and more mission teams were being sent out. More and more people were being added to staff in growing churches. And so, of course, it would be great to have at least 10% given. Also, I remembered that by my own calculations, and I was very much into numbers, I confess, most members seemed to be giving around 7% of their income plus a 20-times special mission contribution every year. That is, we would be asked to give 20 times our normal weekly giving once a year to fund special mission efforts. And if you did the math on that, you'd see that the grand total is about 10% of annual income. So I figured it'd be better just to ask for 10%, and then we wouldn't have to have any other collection. Just ask, expect everyone to give 10%. At any rate, after a year, I realized that the case for the New Testament tithe was quite weak, and so I stopped teaching it. Still, I've always encouraged those who can to give at least 10%. And again, with that one proviso, that is, you're going to have to figure out what that means. Does that mean 10% of net? Does it mean 10% of gross? And wisdom must be brought to bear because every national situation is different. So, do we still need to give? Some would say, well, if it's in the Old Testament, but it's not in the New Testament, we no more need to give 10% than we need to sacrifice animals for forgiveness of sins. Is it that simple? Do we still need to give? Absolutely we need to give. And there are many New Testament passages on this subject. The purposes of giving for a Christian in the New Testament are quite simple. First, it's to help the poor. Preeminently, the poor within the church family and the poor within one's own family, but also outsiders. And secondly, to support church workers because those who preach the gospel should receive their support from their work, from preaching the gospel. That Jesus himself taught that in Matthew 10. We have the example of a relief contribution for starving Christians in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. This was a big deal. Paul was very eager to collect money from the Gentile churches. And this campaign he refers to in Romans 15, we read about the preparation for it in 1 Corinthians 16, because he wanted to be able to personally deliver a gift, a financial gift, to the poor Christians back in Judea, so that when the time of famine came, predicted by the prophet Agabus, the Jewish Christians would know the Gentile Christians loved them, cared for the material needs, and thus this would build unity in the church. And so that is a big part of Paul's emphasis in the New Testament. So do we need to give? Absolutely. Giving to support the work of the church and to help the poor. And there are many scriptures on this. You'd say, well, what if I feel like I'm being forced to? Well, of course, we're not supposed to feel compelled. God loves a cheerful giver. We should want to give. And I think there is a warning to learn from history, because in the Middle Ages, the free will offering of the early church actually became a tax. And if a family didn't pay the tax, that was an offense. It was a crime. And certainly we don't want to have a situation where people feel that they're breaking the law if they don't give a certain amount of money. On the other hand, we do, and we should expect people to give wholeheartedly. You might say, well, I don't really care for my preacher. I don't know if his sermons are all that good. I think they're about 80%. I give them a B, so I'll just give 80% of my contribution. You know, I think some people do think that way, but giving is really between us and God. Now, obviously, you wouldn't want to be funding immoral purposes. If the preacher said, I want to buy drugs on the street corner as soon as I get out of service because I'm feeling a bit low, I obviously wouldn't want to be giving money to that. But that's extreme. That's very unlikely the situation in your congregation. I would urge you to get out of the judging game. If you're withholding contributions, can I use that word? If you're withholding contributions just because there's some things you don't agree with in your local church, don't let that affect your giving. Don't let that embitter you. I would get out of that. You know, over our years as Christians, we've seen a lot of things in the church we didn't agree with, but we never decided to let our contribution go. We never decided to try to somehow get back at the church by holding back. I have a friend who's a very interesting fellow. He's a tax lawyer. And he's made a really interesting observation. Of course, this is confidential information, though the generalization isn't. That's public. What he has seen is that those who give generously tend to do fairly well in their personal finances. Those who just never seem to have enough money are those who seem not to be giving. And it's not a matter of income. He's not saying that, well, those who are poor and strapped have a hard time giving because they don't have money. No, because many of his clients are quite wealthy. But he noticed that those who give very generously, especially those who give more than 10%, tend to have a very good economical situation, domestically speaking. Whereas some of his clients who are very wealthy and just give a pittance of what they make are always having problems and always complaining. In other words, it seems to be a general principle that applies regardless even of your specific religious orientation. When we give, it's as though God smiles upon us. We all need to give. And as mentioned in a previous podcast, even the poor need to help the poor. You can't say, well, I'm so poor, I can't help anybody. I just don't think that's good for our hearts. Everyone needs to be helping. There's always someone we can help. Well, what does this mean today? There are many Old Testament verses, but in the New Testament, there are no verses at all, no explicit verses on tithing. We just have principles. Well, here's what it means. First, there is no minimum. But then, again, there's no maximum. That is to say, well, I've fixed my percentage giving, and that's where it's going to stay for the rest of my life. That's not a spiritual or mature response. There's no maximum. I myself have been misunderstood in things I've said in the past, and maybe I was simply speaking too quickly, which I can do from time to time. But I once remember explaining this important principle 10 years ago. And in the country where I was, I think most people understood, but some people took it the wrong way. And the rumors started going around that I was teaching people should give nothing to the church, that giving was no longer required in the New Testament. And this rumor spread from country to country. And eventually I had to have a meeting with a number of leaders who had heard this. And I said, do you really think I think that? And we talked about the scriptures and I showed them that wasn't true. That's not what I teach. No, I teach that in the New Testament, there's no minimum level, but there's no maximum level either. And most of us can give a lot more. I also observe that when members are treated with respect, for example, allowed to give discreetly or in secret, contributions tend to be higher than in situations where everything is closely monitored. I know in the past I didn't react very well if I felt I was always being checked up on about how much I was giving. Well, I would still give what I was asked to give, but maybe not a lot more. Whereas when I felt trusted, when I felt that I'm not being scrutinized, that's when I say to my wife, let's throw in some extra money. Let's give more. Well, what did Jesus expect? Did Jesus ever give an actual level? And again, this is why it's very hard to prove tithing from the New Testament. Actually, it's impossible. The rich young ruler, Jesus told him to give everything, to give 100%. Zacchaeus, when he came clean, in the next chapter, Luke 18, now we're in Luke 19, when Zacchaeus came clean, he said, look, Lord, I'm going to give half of what I have to the poor, 50%. And Jesus was very happy with that. He said, today salvation has come to this house. The Lord also said in the Sermon on the Mount that we shouldn't let our left hand know what our right hand is doing. In other words, there's no need to blow a trumpet and draw attention to ourselves when we give, or even to draw attention to the level at which we give. Nevertheless, I will share a little bit specifically here just to make sure that I'm being understood. When I was a college student, and I was a college student as a Christian, I mean a university student, for a number of years, quite a few actually, I always worked extra in order to have something to give. Just didn't seem right for me to be enjoying life, eating, you know, three solid meals a day. You know, it was a good life. It wasn't hard. Of course, I had to work. I had to study. But it wasn't like I was, breaking rocks out in some field and on the other side of the world in prison. It was a pretty good situation. And I always felt I need part-time jobs just so I have something to give to the church. As a single, I graduated from school, I gave 20% or more. In fact, I knew some singles who gave 50% of their income. They figured, I don't need it right now. I'm not married. I don't. If I don't give it, I'll just spend it on frivolous things. I'm going to give. And I think even with the responsibility of family, not just us, but many families I know, give at least 15% or so of their income away. And now, well, God has continued to smile upon us, and we give significantly more. And I hope that all my friends in the Western world are giving at a significant level. And so let me generalize, and I'll talk about the exceptions in a moment, but you can add it up pretty easily. If you're giving 2% or 5% of what you make in a year, you're giving that away to support the work of the church, I think you're really making a big, big mistake. This is not good for your heart. And I think that most of us are able to give at a much higher level. Certainly, it's a biblical principle that responsibility is higher in those who have been given much. Many people I know have decided to divide their giving between giving to the church and giving to other worthy causes. Of course, I think that's fine. That's your decision, how you give, where you give, how much you give. It's your decision. But I would advise you to do your part to help your local church make its budget. In other words, perhaps give 10% of your income there and then donate extra gifts to other worthy organizations. Of course, we're very fond of Hope Worldwide. We love the work they're doing in Cambodia, South Africa, the former Soviet Union, the inner cities of the United States, and many other places in the world. But we don't necessarily say no to other requests from other organizations. Again, this is your decision. And if you're married, let's move from you singular to you plural. Make sure you talk about it. Come to an agreement. It's not right when the wife makes a decision or the husband surprises the wife. Guess what? We gave $1,000 today to this agency. I think you need to talk about it and come to agreement. Are you in debt? Perhaps you've made some unwise decisions, or frankly, you've been just hammered by the global economy. We still need to give cheerfully. And I believe work aggressively towards the level of giving at which you would like to ultimately support the work of the Lord locally, generously. If you're in debt, get help. Don't be legalistic. You might want to read the chapter in the book, The Spirit, I think it's chapter 15, that talks about consumerism and materialism, and there are many other books that are recommended there. But we, by all means, need to get out of debt. Get a plan. Perhaps you don't currently have a job, but still, we've got to put the Lord first. When we seek the kingdom first, He has a way of providing for our basic needs. Yet, of course, there's no mechanical relationship. We need to plan prudently. And obviously, if we don't have work currently, we need to be willing to adjust our giving until we're in a stronger position. You'd say, well, I didn't lose my job, but I don't really have a job because I'm just a student. My work is to do my homework. I'm 15 years old. I'm a poor high school student. You know, even for you, I would urge you to change your spending patterns. You'd say, well, spend? I don't spend much. I just get some pocket money. What do you use it for? How much do you spend? How much of that do you give to the church and to the poor? We say, oh, I don't really spend very much. Okay, well then, who is the one who pays for your food and clothes? The truth is, we're all spending. Even if someone else is footing the bill, we're all spending. So to students, I would urge you, earn some money. Do something. Don't, when the collection is taken at church, don't put nothing in. Please don't do that. Always give. If you're old enough to be a Christian, you're old enough to pull your weight. And remember, anyway, for all of us, whatever our age, the more invested we are in anything, the more we care. The more we put in, the more we get out of it. Churches that ask more of their members tend to have healthier fellowships. And it's one of those ironic observations. You might think that the largest churches would be the ones where nothing was expected and everything was dumbed down and easy. But it's not really that way. People are attracted to groups that expect something. When churches ask the members to be involved, to show up to the meetings, to give money, to interact with others, to share their faith, they tend to have healthier fellowships. That's a general observation made by sociologists of religion. These churches tend to grow spiritually and numerically. But I also know this. I know it because I've been a member of at least a dozen churches, and I've seen that correlation with my own eyes. I know this because I've read the studies carried out by these external agencies, and I also know this from visiting some 400 congregations around the world. These principles are biblical. They're real. The more we invest ourselves, the more heart we put in, the more we get out of it. And it's not just at the individual level, it's at the corporate level. The more the church members give, the healthier, the more vibrant that fellowship is. So in summary, tithing means giving 10% of your produce. Originally an agriculturally based practice, this is not easily transferable to the New Covenant situation. Tithing is not mandated in the New Testament. There actually is no official level to give. There's no minimum level. But then again, there's no maximum. And in my opinion, most of us living in wealthier countries should be giving well beyond that 10% level. That's just my opinion. We need to give generously, cheerfully, voluntarily. for there are scriptures advising all of these things. And if at the moment we're unable to do that, we need to do our best to get ourselves into a position where we can help others. Ephesians 4:28 and other passages come to mind. We need to be willing to do something so we'll have something to give to others. As the Lord put it, Dorian elabete, Dorian dote. Freely you have received, freely give.